But there's a difference between making or taking that tough stand and doing it in a non-combatant, rational, non-aggressive sort of way, and doing it with a lot of aggressiveness and a lot of language that might be criticized, and a lot of loudness that could be criticized. Is that still running?
Well, why don't we get on then with as we continue now, with some of the other major figures. But, you know, before we do that,
Well, you haven't got it running yet.
Yes, it is.
Oh, it is.
Can you tell me something about groupings in the legislature that you've seen? Were there, you know, from time to time, there are some cliques and some somewhat ideological groupings.
Oh, yes, yes. I have one of the one of the most conspicuous groupings of that kind occurred, I guess it was in the 59 session, when Vic Atieh was in the House, Monty Montgomery was in the House, Carl Fisher was in the House, and Doug Heider was in the House. And these four people were called the Young Turks, and they're all Republicans, and they set out as a group to get some things accomplished that they wanted to accomplish, and they cooperated very closely with one another. And we're quite successful on a number of issues. The only thing that penetrated and separated that group at all during that session was the timber tax issue. And there were, as a matter of fact, there were some others that joined that group. One of them was a young man from Bend. Can't think of his name now, but I'll find it in just a second. Well, I don't find it.
Well, what were these Young Turks setting out to do?
Oh, I think to handle some of the workman's comp problems, some of the unemployment compensation problems, to improve the revise some of the regulations of industry and business. One of the things that they worked on was the repeal of the inventory tax, which was very onerous here in Portland. And they achieved that over a couple of sessions, but I'm just still trying to find that young man's name. It was Heider, Montgomery, Atieh. And I thought there was one other. Let's see it there. Maybe that was 57. Well, one of the other people that joined them on a lot of matters was Giese, Wayne Giese from Monroe. He joined them on quite a few things. Oh, and John Mosser was close to that group too. John Mosser was a very influential legislator, brilliant mind. He was a real expert on taxation. He had a mind that worked like a computer. And then he was very knowledgeable. He's a lawyer, of course, and he was very knowledgeable about all legal matters and judicial matters. And he took quite an interest in the environment. And he was a fly fisherman, and he had an interest in the outdoors, and both he and his wife. And very influential person. And I think he served in Ways and Means, but he accomplished a lot in his time he was in the legislature, and then he later was to become, well, let's see, he was the head of the Department of Environmental Quality at one time. And he had some other high-powered jobs, as I recall. I want to turn that off for a moment.
Now that we're on again, I was thinking to ask you to stay with the TIA for a bit and think of a TIA in terms of his becoming government, his being material for governor, and you know how you sized him up when you saw him acting as governor.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah.
So, because here's one thing that I don't understand about him that you probably have some idea of. How is he effective as a leader? I mean, people have power. How does it actually work? And it's very different in each case. Yeah. Maybe you can give some kind of an idea of a TIA person as a governor.
Okay. Is that running?
Yes.
Oh, it is. When did you turn it off?
Oh, I just did.
Well, I was very impressed with TIA from the moment he was elected to the legislature. He had such a logical mind and approached legislation so logically. And one could tell that he was by nature conservative on such things as maybe the regulation of business and industry, on spending matters, but when it came to labor matters and environmental issues and issues having to do with welfare and things like that, Vic was not all that conservative. As a matter of fact, when he first got elected to the House, I'm sure some of the old-time Republicans looked askance at him, because he voted for some labor bills and voted for some environmental bills that they would not have voted for. And they thought him a bit too liberal. But by 1957, he was the leader of this group that they called the Young Turks. And they were all young. They were all fairly new in the legislature. And without any question, he was the leader of that group, which, as I said, included, there were really only four, which was Atiyah, Montgomery, and Carl Fisher, what was the other one? Atiyah, Montgomery,
Hyder.
Carl Fisher, and Doug Hyder. But there were others that followed the lead of that group, and that was perhaps Pat Metke, Wayne Giese, probably several others. And Vic was the one who laid down the philosophical foundation on which they operated. He was really the leader of that group. And they followed his lead pretty well. He could make very, very good speeches on the floor when he was supporting or opposing a bill. It was done quietly. Vic worked very quietly. If he spoke, it tended not to be a really impassioned speech like speeches that some other legislators might give, but rather one that had its force in its logic. I don't mean to say that he couldn't get somewhat emotional about an issue sometimes. He could, but it was always restrained. You know, it never came out really so that you would think, well, he's overdoing it or anything like that. It was very much the way he operated when he was governor. He did not seek the limelight. He did not seek a lot of publicity. He approached things from the standpoint of, this is the thing that needs to be done. And it was almost sometimes as if he felt embarrassed to take credit for having made an achievement. And I remember, when Dolores would come down to the legislature, everyone was impressed by the appearance of those two. You know, Dolores was a very beautiful woman, and Vic is a very handsome man, and they made a really, really quite an impression from that viewpoint too. And I've mentioned that Vic was not the rock-hard conservative that so many Republicans before, like in the early 50s, had been. And to give you an illustration of that is, he was the first person to introduce a Scenic Rivers bill, which never passed. It needed work on it, and then Don Wilner finally took the same bill and reworked it, and he got most of the credit for it. Whereas, really, Vic was the one who started the whole thing. Vic loves the outdoors, and is an expert fly fisherman, and has a real strong feeling about saving the resources. Maybe not saving them, but managing them properly. I believe he became Speaker of the House, and then he became President of the Senate when he was elected to the Senate, and was a good leader in a quiet sort of way compared to maybe some others that had been speakers or presidents of the Senate. He knew how to gather support in the legislature for things that he wanted done. And I think he was a good administrator when he was Speaker and President of the Senate. He was very well liked by both Democrats and Republicans. And Democrats that didn't always agree with him still had a great deal of respect for him. I think you saw in his administration when he was governor a reflection of this personality that didn't seek a lot of public recognition for getting things done, but rather was satisfied that if he got things done, it was something that he wanted to do, and it was done. There was no need for him to get a lot of public recognition for it. It's almost as if he was embarrassed by public acclaim. But when he ran for governor, he found, I'm sure, that you know there was a certain amount of this that he had to do in order to get elected. As a matter of fact, I retired in 1978 from Weyerhaeuser, and I had made plans to go to Portugal and spend 3 weeks in Portugal. And I got a call from Vic, and he said, "Herb, I want you to manage my campaign." And I said, "Vic, I'm flattered, but you know, I've got this, I've already made these arrangements with another couple to go to Portugal for 3 weeks, and you can't afford to wait that long." And he said, "Well, gosh, why don't you cancel that?" Or some words to that effect. And he said, "After all, you get paid for it." And I said, "Well, Vic, I'm just kind of burned out," or something like that, you know, "and I just feel the need to have a period here where I don't do much." And since then, I've thought many times that, you know, that would have been fun to do that. And I should have done it.
Who ended up doing it?
Pardon?
Who ended up doing it?
I believe. I don't know. I can't remember.
Well, that's not so essential. How come he picked you?
I don't know. We had a good relationship in the legislature, and I know when I retired, he made a speech. He came and made a speech at my retirement party. And it was quite flattering. I gathered that he was impressed with, through the years that I had worked with him and known him, with my integrity more than anything else, I guess. I don't know.
But a nice tribute.
Yeah, but you know, I've often thought that I would have liked to have done that. Now that I have second thoughts about it, I should have done it. But what else can I say about Vic? I think he became governor at a period when really there was a need to sort of keep a firm hand on the purse strings. You know, Oregon wasn't doing all that well economically. And I understand that he once made the remark, if it's not broke, don't fix it. And I think that was a reflection of his feeling that he should not, or that he ought to run a very conservative administration from a spending standpoint, that the state could not stand to spend more money and raise taxes to get more revenue, that raising taxes would not be accepted by the people of Oregon. Vic was innovative in many instances, especially on taxation. He wanted to have the state adopt a better system of financing schools. And he had been a real expert on education. He served as chairman of the education committee, and he served on the education committee for I don't know how many sessions. And he understood the school problem very, very well, school finance problem. And he was convinced that you needed a different system. But he himself did not like a sales tax. And he pointed out to me a number of times that the cost of administering a sales tax is so high in relation to what you bring in from it, with it. And that a better way to go would be a net receipts tax, which, if you drafted it properly, would work out about the same in impact on various segments of the public as would a sales tax. And that net receipts type tax was partially adopted in, I think, McCall's tax program that was defeated. And you see, Vic had been working on that in the Senate and then the House from the time that he first got elected. He took the leadership in getting rid of the inventory tax. And the inventory tax was repealed over a period of years until it was reduced gradually until finally there was no inventory tax anymore. And the reason for that was that there were a lot of businesses in Portland that were suffering severely from an inventory tax, and it was driving some people to go to, or some businesses to go to a situation where they would have a showroom where, let's say they had furniture. They'd show you the furniture, then it would be shipped in from out of state when you bought it. So that the state was losing business. Vic, I found to be a man of great integrity, as honest and as they make them, meticulously so. And I always appreciated that about him. He was a warm person. And a person, when you dealt, you know, one-on-one with him or in a small group, and maybe otherwise, he might appear to be a little distant, somewhat like Hatfield in that sense. Um, but very gracious, and so was his wife, very much so. Dolores was a little more fiery than Vic. had a little more, what should I say, emotional reaction to things than Vic did.
She was she politically interested, or?
Well, if someone criticized Vic, or without adequate reason, Dolores could flare. She could get emotional about it, quite angry about it. And she also had very strict opinion, very firm opinions on various people, what, especially if they did things that were not acceptable in polite society, and the women that were not very ladylike, and that sort of thing. Vic always seemed under very firm control emotionally. You have asked about how he administered the government. It's hard to say. I think he was very approachable by any interest group or any person that had had any kind of grievance or had some ideas about what ought to be done or ought not to be done. But he was not a person to act precipitously on anything unless he was absolutely sure it was a good route to go. Maybe that's the mark of a conservative. But again, I would stress that he wasn't nearly as conservative as there are some earlier governors, McKay, for example, or Elmo Smith. He wasn't as conservative as Elmo Smith.
Yeah.
Very, very nice person.
Uh-huh. Well, it sounds like a well-rounded characterization of Atiyah.
Yeah. A nice person from the standpoint that you could rely on what he said. He had this complete integrity. He had strong moral fiber.
Well, I wonder if you could do the same sort of thing with some of the other figures that you knew well or fairly well. We mentioned a number of them. You can go a number of different directions.
Incidentally, this might lead into some comment about Dick Guymon. Vic Atiyah and Dick Guymon became, when I was like about 1957, they became very close. I wouldn't say friends, but they both were great students of taxation, and they both had some good ideas about what might be done with this or that tax. And they did a lot of consulting back and forth with one another. And Vic, I think, had a rather high regard for Guymon's knowledge, his intelligence, and his innovative, his ability to innovate in taxation. And they spent a lot of time together on shaping tax programs. That kind of leads into, that is not to say that Vic admired Dick Guymon for his viewpoints on other matters, because there are many things that Dick Guymon would have, there are many issues on which Dick Guymon and Attia would have disagreed strongly on. Well, there were some, I don't know how many, but they would have disagreed strongly, and I'm sure that Vic would have been would be critical of some of Guymon's